We are Enneagram Type 9s. They call us the peacemakers, the mediators, the harmonizers, and even the comfort-seeking, self-forgetting, conflict-avoiding, anger-repressing, people-pleasing, procrastinating, indecisive, stubborn, passive-aggressive, yet undeniably likable sweethearts of the Enneagram. But guess what, 9s? We're so much more than that. I'm Kimberly Eclipse, a trained counselor, everyday mentor, and professional astrologer for peacemakers like you. And this is the Enneagram 9 Show. Hey, what's up, Type 9s? Welcome to another episode of the Enneagram 9 Show. Now, I am just sitting here in my pajamas. It's late at night. I've already brushed my teeth, washed my face. I'm ready for bed. I am exhausted. It's been a crazy, crazy week. But I want to come on here and quickly record the intro to today's episode. And the reason is because I was just so excited to put today's episode out into the world. I never do this, but I actually just recorded the interview with today's guest a few hours ago. And I'm not even editing it. I am just stitching it together with this intro and putting it out there because that's how excited I am for you to hear this conversation. Today, I'm talking with Michael Shahan. Michael Shahan is an Enneagram-informed marriage and family therapist, licensed therapist. And he was just a delight, so full of knowledge, insight, empathy, compassion. It's a great conversation. I'm going to let it speak for itself. It's just so great. You're in for lots of insight, really practical tips, and kind of like an inside, behind-the-scenes peek at what it's like to be a clinician who is working with a lot of nines and really seeing from the therapist's chair type nines growing in real time. The good, the bad, the ugly. I mean, none of it is really bad, but it's messy. Growth is messy and it's not linear. But I think all of that is important for us to see. Now, I was so excited in this episode that I totally forgot to ask Michael to share with you where you can find him if you really love this episode. So I'm just going to give that information now and I'm going to drop it in the show notes. So if you want more of Michael Shahan and you're interested in what he has to offer and what he has to say, you can find him at michaelshahan.com. And then on Instagram, he is michaelshahan_therapy. And I really do recommend his Instagram because he has such great, useful, funny, really thought out content on there. And I find it so valuable, so helpful. So definitely check that out. Now, the other really special thing about Michael is that he is actually participating in Nines Rising in our virtual retreat for Enneagram Type 9s that is happening on May 4th. I'm really excited about this. He was really a dream guest of mine to have at the retreat. So I was so ecstatic when he said yes. What he'll be doing is the live coaching part of the retreat. So he will actually be working with people at the retreat who have volunteered to share some of what they're going through, ask their questions, and then he's going to coach them live in front of the rest of us so that we can all learn together. I love the idea of live coaching. I know there are other coaches out there who do that. It's really just so helpful. You know, it's one thing if you're listening to someone teach you about what you can do to heal, to grow. It's another thing to watch someone else in that process. It's just a different kind of learning experience. And it's so unique. So if you'd like to join us at Nines Rising on May 4th, virtual retreat, so you can join us from anywhere in the world, you can check out Enneagram9.com to purchase your tickets. Now, last week I had said you would get this 25% off discount code, but the window of time to use it was pretty short. Well, the good news is that I am extending that discount so that you can use it. All of those who listen to this show, I'm so grateful for you, especially after that crazy hiatus that I had where I was gone for quite some time. The least I can do is offer this thank you of the 25% off your Nines Rising ticket. So if you'd like 25% off, just head to enneagram9.com and then at checkout, you're going to use the code podcast25. Again, that's podcast25. So please join us if you want to know the full lineup and the full itinerary for the retreat. Check out enneagram9.com. All right, let's press the play button on my discussion, my conversation with the incredible Michael Shahan. All right, Michael Shahan, welcome to the Enneagram Hello. 9 show. Hello.
Thank you. Thank you. Excited for this. Yeah. I love talking Enneagram stuff.
Yes, yes. I'm really excited to have you here. I alluded to this maybe last time we spoke, off the podcast, that I'm just kind of like fangirling right now because I know you from a distance. My palms are sweating. Oh my gosh. No way.
Like really? Like actually right now?
I mean, they're always sweating because I have hyperhidrosis, but like I hit record and now they're really sweat. I don't know what happened, but now I'm like, even though I've been talking with you for 5 minutes already, before hitting record, suddenly I have stage fright, which doesn't really happen that often on the show. So I hope you're flattered more so than weirded out.
Yeah, it's a combination of both. It's not weird. It's just, it's uncomfortable as a nine to like, to hear that. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I'm not that. It hits a lot of that nine stuff. Like, I'm not that important. What are you talking about? And it's, I think a couple of years ago, that would have really affected me in a really scary way. But I'm getting more used to that, kind of owning my own worth and saying, you know, like, yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting space as a nine to like, be seen in that way.
To receive compliments.
Yeah, and to be seen as somebody really important and cool, or somebody sort of worthy to be fangirled over.
Well, wait a minute. I didn't say you were cool. I didn't say you were cool now.
Okay. Oh, man. I guess I assumed it. I should not have assumed that. See? Should have listened to my nineness.
All right. So I want to just start off with having everyone get to know you a little bit. So would you mind just sharing, if you're comfortable, your dominant wing, if you have one, subtype, if you're into tri-types, share that.
Yeah. So I'm a nine, social nine. Instinctual stacking would be social, sexual, and then self-preservation blind, if you all know what that means. I tend to lean more toward a one wing in a lot of ways compared to other nines that I know who it can go back and forth, but when I'm when I see other nines who have stronger eight wings, it's like, okay, yeah, it's there, but it's not as strong as that. And what else? Tri-types wise, I don't look much into that. It can be interesting at times, but in my opinion, I think it can distract people from the core work of their number, but you do you. Tri-type wise, what I think it's usually 9-7-2, which is interesting, is just full on positive outlook triad, all three. Yes. And so that is one of the things that can get me in trouble a lot and can be difficult, just how easily my brain can go to like, things are going to be okay, and thinking the best, even when I don't want to. It's very interesting, and I think that's kind of that plays a part in the tri-type piece.
Yeah, we're almost twinning right now. We're almost twins, except for you've got the two in your tri-type, and mine is more of a four.
Wow. So, okay. Interesting. Yeah. Everything else is like the same. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's crazy. Okay. All right. So you are an Enneagram informed therapist.
Yes.
Coach, which I love. Can you share what does that look like and why? Why did you decide to bring the tool of the Enneagram into therapy in such a deliberate way?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll start with the why, and I think that can probably feed into the what it looks like too. I remember right after grad school, I had known some about the Enneagram before, but right after grad school, and my first clients that I saw, this couple, they sort of knew the Enneagram, and I was like, just kind of interested in it because I knew about it a little bit. And then they said they listened to this podcast that kind of talked about both their numbers. And I remember her saying like, my jaw hit the floor when I heard this way my husband is being described. And it made sense to me how he thinks in a way it didn't before. And they both, so it opened up this sort of understanding of each other and this sort of appreciation of their differences and understanding and being able to empathize and be there for each other. And I was like, oh my God, like this, whatever this Enneagram thing is, it's doing my job for me in a way. Like it just seemed, it was just, I saw it. I couldn't deny that like, this is helpful to people. This does great things for people and helps them communicate and help them understand each other. And so from there on, I really dove into it. I listened to that episode she talked about. I listened to it. So many other podcasts about it and books, and I've done a training and just started utilizing it more and more regularly with my clients. And it sort of eventually sort of became this kind of, that's my specialty. Like 95% of the people I see are coming because they want an Enneagram informed therapist.
Wow. I love
So it
that.
sort of evolved into that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
So as far as what
hold
is,
up, sorry.
yeah, you want me to talk about kind of what it looks like sort of
Yes.
a little
Yes.
bit. Yeah. It's, so I still do therapy. I still, my training in grad school and the trainings I've done, I'm EMDR trained. I use internal family systems, and I even with that, it's not the Enneagram or that. It's the Enneagram as more of a lens, and then I do those. It's the Enneagram isn't necessarily the tool that I work with. It's like the tool is sort of more often like the type of therapy I'm doing and what I'm doing with the client, but the lens that I look at people and make sense of them behaviorally and emotionally is always Enneagram. I'm always, it just, it makes so much sense. And so much of therapy is, I like the phrase, it's making the unconscious conscious. So taking these things that we don't know about ourselves and bringing them to light is what therapy is. And that's exactly what the Enneagram does. And so it's like in my opinion, they have the same goals in a lot of ways. So the Enneagram allows me to make the unconscious conscious and allows me to speak to these patterns and kind of shortcut growth in a lot of ways, not in like a cheap way, but like there's a phrase, I forgot what the quote is. It's something like, for one man to grow, he needs to talk more. For another man to grow, he needs to talk less. And so that this idea that like if I have an eight in my office, or if I have an eight in my office, I'm not going to tell them to trust your gut. Go with what you want all the time. Like I'll say that to a nine because that's hard for them, but an eight, that's easy. That's what they do all the time. An eight, I might say, like, question your gut. It's overactive in you and you oversee it as truth. So let's question that. So it kind of really dictates where I go with clients in a lot of ways. It's like a map to growth that is just really, really helpful to use in therapy, just overtly or not even overtly. If somebody isn't familiar with the Enneagram, I'm still thinking about it all the time.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I could see how handy that could be. I found
Yeah.
myself doing that in my mind, like when I have friends and they're newer friends and we get into our first little tiff.
Okay.
I know I'm not supposed to type people, but I do start to think about, like, I guess almost as a way of maybe understanding
Yeah,
someone
sure.
better. It's like that map, like you said, like a little shortcut to greater empathy
Yeah,
for
yes,
me.
which
And
is
so
Which is in sort of in effect a very nine thing to do, which is hilarious. Like it helps me
is
understand and empathize people better. I get to understand and see their perspective even more accurately. Not that
right. I
that's a
get to
bad thing, but
merge
it's just,
even more.
it's
No.
like crack for a nine in some ways.
Oh no, that's what it's been the whole time. Okay. Okay, I love that. And I'm really curious too. You know, sometimes I visited your website earlier and I'm often on your Instagram too.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I visited your website, your tagline was, you're not what's wrong with you.
Yeah.
And I just, wow. I don't know, my bodily response to that and the tagline on your Instagram, which is always healing, already
Already home.
whole. Something happened in me when I read both of those. It's like
Oh, I love
I
that.
don't know if like my heart fell to the floor or it like I vomited it up in my throat or if I had an out of body experience, like some kind of mix. But something happened in me when I read both
Okay.
of those. So can you just share more about what this means for you as a person, as a clinician? What do you mean when you say you're not what's wrong with you? I'll stop there.
Okay, yeah, I love that you brought that up. I appreciate that compliment because I spent a lot of time thinking about that wording.
I was about to
Yeah,
say,
it's,
who did you hire for your copywriting?
I just,
But
it's something.
you.
I work with somebody who helps me do some of my writing and stuff, but that was something that kind of that just came out of our work together and just
It
kind of
did.
trying to talk about who I am and what I believe in my work and stuff, and that kind of came out of it. But you're not
Yeah,
with
so
what's wrong
powerful.
with you. It was interesting. I remember like kind of being nervous to put that up there because I know some people might react of like, oh wow, this, I don't know how that might work, but in my head, my anxiety said that people will not like that and say, oh, nobody takes responsibility for themselves anymore. And everyone blames everybody else with this generation or whatever. You've probably heard similar things like that. So part of me worried, but I really think it's true. Like this idea that you aren't what's wrong with you. There may be something that is, quote, wrong with you, maybe, like something that you find difficult or that hurts other people or you hurt yourself or traps you get stuck in personality wise, but that's not who you are. Those things that are wrong with you don't have the authority to define who you are, like, period. And it's because when we define ourselves by our mistakes, we get trapped in a really shameful place, which shuts us down and keeps us from accessing and processing important emotions. It kind of freezes us in us. And so I think it's a very normalizing way to look at it. You're not what's wrong with you. Like, sure, there's room to grow and let's do that. But it's not because, but not from a shame place, not from a beating myself up. I need to be better in order to be worthy, or I need to get rid of these parts of me. Cause I don't know if that makes sense. You're not what's wrong with you. Cause we have parts of us that become unhelpful, but to sort of assign a moral label to your defense mechanisms, I think is really unhelpful. It's not a, is it good or bad to do this thing? It's, is it helpful or is it not helpful to you and the people around you? Like, I think it gets us stuck in a lot of ways trying to moralize our, because, like, for example, one person might be an alcoholic and struggle and make a big splash. Their defense mechanism hurts more people and is seen more publicly by culture as bad, or a drug addiction or something, where somebody else may be extremely people pleasing and they fawn for their like defense mechanism and they get celebrated for that. And it just, to me, that feels really unfair. It keeps people stuck in their patterns and on both ends of the spectrum. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I like the way you're coming away from the moralizing of things. And I feel like I do that a lot when because I'm a nine
It's a very
in
gut
one.
try
And
thing.
for me, for me, there is this kind of like moral judgment of myself often. So coming away from, the morality of things and more so thinking about helpful versus unhelpful, I find that like, when you're making any kind of change, when it's coming from a place of shame versus a shame, a sense of like wanting more for yourself because that's how much you love yourself, it looks different. Like they
Yes, it
manifest if the
does.
changed behavior manifests differently.
Yeah,
So
it's like a running toward something versus running away from something that you're afraid of.
yes. And the thing is with the Enneagram, I think it can be tempting to learn about your number, your type, and then be like, okay, so this is what's wrong with me. Like to focus on that. I think that's really tempting.
Either, people either do that or they say, oh, this is the best part of me, and they over-identify with it. Like, this is who I am. I'm a seven. I'm super fun. I'm like, which is like not really. That's sort of getting you as stuck, in my opinion, as sort of over-identifying with it can keep you just as stuck as like, this is what's wrong with me.
Do you think that there are some types that might gravitate more towards the Enneagram? Okay, here's what's wrong with me versus the Enneagram. Here's what's great about me.
Yeah, I mean, I think for like the seven and one would be the far ends of that spectrum. I think the one would be this is what's wrong with me. I need to fix it. I'm bad. And this highlights the bad parts of me, which is using the Enneagram from the lens of already this sort of unhealthy oneness, which gets you stuck. But I would say the ones will probably lie in there, and the sevens are more in that. This is because people, the sevens are always like, oh my God, I'm the fun one. Or people say, I wish I could be the seven. Like, I think that would be the other end of the spectrum would be the seven. And then the sort of more what's wrong with me would be the one. That's an interesting question. I think that's
Gotcha.
probably what I would think.
What about nine? So I know you work with all types. Would you say that you work predominantly with nines, or is it a good mix?
It's a decent mix. It's a good mix, but likely more nines. I think just because I attract nines by my content because I am a nine, maybe. And I tend to see more nines and ones and twos. Maybe in therapy more often, and sixes. I don't know. Yeah, it depends. I mean, it's all this. All my evidence is just anecdotal. I don't know who goes to therapy most often, but I do see a lot of nines, and it's just I really resonate with the struggle of a nine. I love working with them because I get it.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Like, as a nine who works with nines, how does it serve and how does it hinder the process?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I can find myself getting it's I used to say, and it's sort of less like this these days, but I used to say nines are either my favorite clients or my worst clients. Because it's like I love working with them. I know how they think in a lot of ways, and I know how they treat themselves because I do that, and so it's easier to sort of call out and see and work with. And but I also can get like stuck because like if you see a nine, if I work with a nine, like, oh, I haven't figured that out either, man. Like, I don't know how to fix that. Or like, right. I don't like, I just said fix it. That's funny. But like, yeah, I don't know how to change that because I have that too. Like needing to change parts of me. That's what's hard. But yeah, it's either the best or the worst because I get it, but also it's like, I get it. And so it can be almost at times dysregulating because it's so familiar to me. And if I sort of get dysregulated and find myself wanting to kind of overly latch on and I have to help them because that's unconsciously helping me, then like, then I become not as good of a therapist for sure.
Gotcha. Okay, so I'm really curious about the journey of growth and healing for nines and what that looks like from your perspective as a clinician. So, I mean, we're all here. If we're interested in the Enneagram, if someone's listening to this show, it's because they have an interest in their own growth and healing.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, if, you do this professionally. You are walking alongside people who are actively doing this and they've made the choice, right? So, from your end, what does growth look like for nines just on a weekly basis?
Yeah, okay. I think in, I'm like, I can speak to, yeah. It looks a lot like showing up for yourself, paying attention to yourself, because nines, that sort of passion or the deadly sin of a nine is they call it sloth, or like it's this kind of checking out from yourself, or a psycho-spiritual laziness. It feels like it takes too much energy to really spend any time on anything that affects or helps me. It's like, ah, that feels like a lot of work. Yeah, I don't want to do it. I'd just rather do this other thing. Like that's such a trap place for a nine of like that sloth. And so a lot of the work of a nine looks like showing up for yourself, paying attention to what you want, what you need, trying out what you want, what you need, taking up space in relationships around you. Because and it gets uncomfortable. Usually what happens is nines will feel arrogant. They'll feel narcissistic in a lot of ways to, because I was just talking to a client about this today. She said, this is so like, this woman who was paying to talk to me, right? Said, I feel so scattered today. I just talked so much. I just made it about me the whole time. Can't believe I did that. I was like, wow, like that is a really strong defense mechanism. Like, so when she shows up, takes up space, talks about her in a way that she normally doesn't anywhere else, this stuff, these messages internally come up in her of like, that was arrogant. You're taking up too much space. It's me, all about me. What's my problem? I'm arrogant. And what that really, it's not, and it felt so true to her, and I couldn't convince her otherwise. And I knew I likely couldn't in her nineness at that moment. But it's like, it's not arrogant. That is the sort of your personality system of the nine is built around keeping you safe by being small, by checking out, by withdrawing, by not making too much of a splash. Like, right. Like that's how we have protected ourselves our whole life, by managing and mediating other people and not showing up. And so when we don't do that, our defenses are like, oh, this is bad. This is not safe to do this. And so we start getting these internal messages of you're being arrogant. Because if we listen to that, it brings us right back to not showing up in space, not showing up, not taking up space. And that's what kind of our ego, our personality wants. Did that make sense?
So when you're working with people, do you find that they'll like have some success? They'll do something where they're focusing on themselves or they're shining in some way,
Yes,
and then
they feel
they
horrible.
backslide. They backslide and they're like, "Oh, I shouldn't have
Yes,
done that." Do you see that a lot?
that's exactly what they do. There's regret and there's shame sometimes, and all this stuff gets triggered that has never really been triggered in you because you've been comfortably kind of taking a back seat. Well, comfortably until it gets too uncomfortable, right? Until that starts creating its own problems. But when people try to show up and do it differently, there's this internal homeostasis that happens. Homeostasis meaning this sort of systemic pressure of, so in any sort of system, if somebody acts differently than how things have always been, everybody kind of unconsciously comes around them and wants to bring them back to where they were. That's just sort of just like that's what happens systemically. Like if you're in a family and you decide to do something really different, you can be shunned or shamed or all those things. And so what happens is there's an internal homeostasis that happens in you when you try to act different, when you try to do something different, because it wants you to go back to how things always were, because that's what is perceived as safety. Does that make sense?
You just want to go back. It's like you went on a boat into the sea and you're like, wait, I need to row myself back to that
Yes,
island. What
that's exactly what it is. And it's like, this
was
is
I
what I wanted to
thinking?
be out here. Yeah, because if we get to
Right.
this place where we get sick of our own, like, and our own defense mechanisms start creating problems. Like for nines, it's like nobody cares about me, or I'm not doing what I want in my life, or I'm not choosing me, and all these things start happening. It's like, cool, let me do something different. And then when we try, what can happen right away is, uh-oh, shouldn't have done that. This is too much. I'm arrogant. But like, I anytime a nine says this is probably arrogant or self-centered, what's about to come out of their mouth 99% of the time is not arrogant or self-centered.
Wow.
And so that's some of the biggest things that I see with nines, that kind of the need to focus on themselves and show up for themselves, but then also this kind of internal reaction of when that happens. And it can feel
Wow.
really uncomfy. So actually a great example of this, I remember this was several years ago before I got right around the time I was getting fully licensed. So after grad school, I graduated in 2017. I had to get like 2,000 to 3,000 hours of clinical experience to be fully licensed. And I finally did it. So with there's supervision and there's hours and all these things that it takes to do it. And I was talking to a friend and I said, I'm about to be fully licensed. And he said, wow, congratulations. What are you going to do to celebrate? And then I was like, celebrate, like it's not that big of a deal, which is such a nine thing to say. And he is so kind. He was like, yes, it is. That's a big deal. And then I had this moment of like, oh my God, he's right. That is a big deal. I did a lot. I earned this. Wow. And then instantly I felt the stomach dropping, flushing shame of like, oh my God, I'm so arrogant. And I felt that happen. And I had been doing my own work and awareness that I was like, oh wait, that happened, but that doesn't have to be true. And I was able to kind of hold both of those. Like, yes, I think it's true that this, I did a lot of work and I'm getting good at this and I spent a lot of time in this. And it felt really arrogant, but that doesn't have to be true. I was able to kind of hold those at once. That was a really big moment for me. So the first time I really ever felt that like internal homeostasis pop up that tries to like keep me down. Yeah.
So what do you mean when you say you were holding them both? So you were allowing yourself to feel like too
Yes.
much arrogant, like you just allow you didn't judge yourself for being that
Exactly.
way. Is that what you're
100%.
saying?
Yep. It's like, wait, I feel this way, but I don't think that's true. I don't have to judge myself. Like, this is just like of course this feeling is coming up. And it was this interesting, like I was able to kind of see both as I was able to see like the second I saw the truth that I did this really good and I'm worthy of being celebrated, then I got reactive. But like it didn't take away in that moment, that reactive didn't take away that I thought I deserved it. And I thought that I did a lot of good things. They kind of both existed at once and I kind of allowed them, which I think is a lot of growth work needs to happen. It's not getting rid of parts of yourself and shaming parts of yourself to never come back. It's being able to kind of understand the parts of you and show up for them and allow them to sort of be there, kind of.
It's a very compassionate way of
Yeah, yes.
like
I think
experiencing that
that's,
moment.
yeah, I think that's just very, the way I work with people is very compassion filled. I think people naturally tend to try to shame themselves out of behaviors, but I bring me one bit of proof that that works long term and I'll change my mind. It just doesn't.
I'm curious now, like in terms of this path for growth. I saw on your Instagram that you were talking about, you were quoting someone, something about 10%, like
The
improving by
10% principle.
10%.
Yeah.
Yeah, can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah. This is an idea from this lady named Janine Fisher, who's this therapist, and I did a recent training of hers, and she works a lot with shame. But this idea, this 10% principle that when we get in this idea that did this thing in therapy, so this idea that a therapeutic thing or a bit of healing or I don't know, some sort of self-work, nothing really will ever actually change you more than 10%. And that kind of feels maybe sad at first, like, oh, wow, well, that feels like so small. But what that does is it takes away this binary view of did this help or did it not help? And if you don't see it helping perfectly, then it's easy to just frame it as, oh, that must have not helped, versus where did this help? How did this change me, even in the smallest ways? Because that's what leads to that over and over and over again is what leads to change. We can't change our personality. Just like I was saying earlier, like, when we try to change our personality in a big way, it kind of turns in on itself. And we feel in a nervous system, in a very real nervous system way, very unsafe when we try to make too many changes. And so it actually, not only is too many changes like not helpful, it just doesn't work. It will sort of, our growth will kind of collapse in on itself. And versus this 10% small bits, because it sort of one forces us to look in the ways that things are helping instead of a black and white helping or not helping. And it's just, I think it's a very normalized, yeah, it's a normalized way to look at that. We're not going to ever change overnight, and that's not the expectation. And if we ex ever expect that, we're going to frame any growth we're doing as not growth.
Well, a lot has changed in my life over the last few years, like 3 years or so. And a lot in part due to the Enneagram. So there are some like huge strides I've made, and every time there was that kind of win where I could really be myself and really say something that is true to someone I care about, very scary. That's just not my style. Like if there's something that is true for me, but it's gonna hurt someone else
Yes,
or
that.
cause a rift, I will just convince myself that it's not, that's not really how I feel.
And we're so good at that, aren't we? It's like
We sure
impressive how
are.
good we are at
It's
convincing ourselves of that.
scary.
Jeez.
Oh my gosh. I wish I could tell you all the specifics, but things are still
Sure.
kind of fresh for me, so I won't get into that just yet. But I will say that in the moments when I had the courage to say something, first of all, it took me forever to say like one sentence. And then I would have to take a 5 minute break, and then I would say the second sentence. And then
Baby
after
steps.
that, I felt I would fall right asleep. And the person, I would just be like, I am so tired now because
Like actually sleep or like
yes.
metaphorically?
No, I
Wow,
fell asleep.
perfect. That's so nine. Oh, yes.
My body was so tired because, oh my gosh, it took all of my strength to share how I felt and say I'm not responsible necessarily for how people respond to how, I've been feeling. So I really relate to this idea of like, oh, wait. So what I wanted to say after that was, then there would be like months and months of not saying how I feel.
Okay,
So
sure, like
there would be like
snapping
the
back to kind of
recovery.
hiding away from it since it felt so hard. Yeah,
Yes. Yeah.
sure.
So what you were sharing with your clients reminded me of my own process too, of I can do a little bit, but then I need a break. But then months later, I will return to that thing that I said. I'll bring it
And that's
back
and
up.
yeah.
And that's just how it goes. I don't love it, but that's all I can manage, and that's better than how I was, in my 30s. I'm in my 40s now. So
Okay.
it's something.
And it's and what you're talking about is like that's yes, and not only is it like the best you can do to that, it's actually really the only way we can change. There's a term called titration. Have you heard that term? It's like a chemistry term, but in terms of like mental health and therapy stuff, it's this idea that our nervous system is our nervous system will, if something becomes overwhelming, it will pull back. Because good or bad, positive or negative, whatever, if we get overloaded, we will kind of take a step back, like the hokey pokey, right? Put one foot in, one foot out, like right. That's kind of how growth works. And a great example of this is, have you ever seen those videos online where people who are colorblind put these glasses on and they can kind of it lets them see color in a way that they haven't? Have you seen those videos?
No, I
Okay,
haven't.
love those videos. Always cry like a baby. But what they do every time without realizing it is they'll look around the glasses and they take the glasses off and kind of look around or put their head in their hands and then put them on again. And what they're doing is they're titrating without real, because it's so overwhelming to see color like that in a way they never have that their nervous system can't handle it. And they naturally, without even realizing, take the sunglasses off and look around for a second. And that's a great example of titrating. And when we do self-growth and self-work, that's the only way it can actually stick and be permanent if we titrate in and out of it. Too much, too soon, like too fast, that's traumatizing, like and wounding. And so we, in order to actually grow and change, we have to titrate in and out of hard stuff, take care of ourselves, do the easy thing for a little bit, and then do something else hard, and then come back and kind of, if there's not a sense of ease to it, in and out of it, then I think it's not going to be helpful long term.
Okay. So what about so the people who come in to see you, you mentioned there are different clients who like you gravitate toward, they're your favorite, and others who it's a frustrating experience for you because you can relate and you can't help. Would you say there are certain marks of people who do really well in therapy? And I'll say nine specifically if you had any thoughts on that, versus the ones who they get stuck and cannot progress. Like, are there any markers or characteristics or patterns, commonalities for people who can really make that progress, even if it's just the 10%?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The first thing that comes to mind is people who have a lot of shame, especially like a bodily level, tend to get stuck more easily. They tend to be those people who, like, I know that, like, the people who kind of every session's like, are you upset with me? Like, I know you're probably annoyed with me, and I'm like, I'm not. And every single time, they just don't know how to not believe that. They get so stuck, and it's what that is. It's these sort of shame states is what Janita Fisher calls it. This place we get stuck where we can't really see any logic outside of that. We just think we're the worst. And it's what that, yeah, that's what can get people stuck. But a lot of times what I do with that is I bring the body into it. I ask people to do body movements and things, and that kind of works it out of your system in a way that talking doesn't. But my first answer would be people with a lot of heavy shame can get stuck easier. Not like it's their fault or anything, but at nines, I want to speak to a part of that question too, like specifically nines. I found that when nines come in because to see me because somebody else wanted them to, then they don't make as much progress because there's really no buy-in. It's like and my girlfriend said I should come here because I get too angry or whatever, or my partner told me I should do this. And it's a lot of the reasons nines come into therapy a lot, or a lot of times more than a lot of anonymous, because other people think I should. And so there's not really a lot of
Really?
buy-in. Yeah. Like
Really?
a merging with other people. Like, other people think I need to do this, so I'll do this. And it's like, it can be helpful. It's not like nothing can work from it, but those people tend to not make as much growth right away, which makes sense. They're like teenage clients who don't want to be there. Like, I don't really at an unconscious level want to be here, whether they know that or not. And
That's
also,
interesting. How do
oh.
they even get into your office? Like, is it like ultimatum kind of thing? Like, if you don't go to therapy, then
Sometimes.
it's over?
Yeah, and
Because
it's not always that strong. Sometimes it's more subtle. Sometimes it's like a the reason nines come to therapy is because they think they're too much for other people. I'm too angry. My partner says I'm too angry. When what actually is going on a lot of times is my partner doesn't know how to handle my opinions. And like, but they come in thinking like, I'm too angry. I need to be less angry, which what that is, it's this nine thing of I need to make less of an impact. I need to be smaller. And it's like, I don't want to help you do that. I don't want to help you do more of already nine. And every number has that in their own way, honestly, this own like kind of way that I can go to therapy to almost try to improve my own ego patterns that are unhelpful in the first place. But it's sneaky. But for the nines, it looks like I'm too angry. When in reality, it's like, no, you're allowed to be angry. That's an important part of being a human. It's not, there's nothing wrong with you because you get angry at times. It's because you're a human and that is allowed to be expressed. Does that make sense?
I'm surprised. It makes sense, but I'm just like shocked.
Okay, sure.
But one of the more recent times that I went into therapy, I was just like, I'm tired of my own BS. I just like,
Okay,
why is my
yeah,
life like
yes.
this? Like, I'm so stagnant, and I don't feel connected to who I am, and
Wow,
this
yeah.
can't happen. And this was also, there was a little bit of a postpartum depression mixed in too. I
Sure.
think that was
Yeah,
really
wow.
the what pushed me in, where I was
Okay.
like, okay, I am calling a therapist right
Can't do this
now.
anymore, kind of thing.
Because that was very alarming. It was I just remember after I had my second child, I had this thought of like, I wonder if it mattered if I were alive or not. And it was
Wow.
very like cold. It wasn't like I was crying. It
Okay.
was just like, is there a reason?
Yeah,
Like,
it's this
does
sort
it
of checked
matter?
outness. Yeah, it's a very nine place to be, this kind of hollow existence of like a feeling very peripheral and not really part of everything and kind of disconnected.
So as soon as I had that qu question pop up in my mind, that's when I
Nice, good for
initiated
you.
the therapy
Sure.
right away.
It's gonna be scary thoughts for
But
people in their
yeah,
life.
I was wondering if there were nines who show up for you in a similar way, where they're just like feeling really disconnected from any of their old previous goals or what they really want. Like their
Yeah.
life looks so different from what they really wanted. Do you see nines
Yeah,
like that who
sure.
are just so disconnected from that?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Or people like kind of wanting to be it can come from a place of shame a lot. Like I'm shaming myself. I want to be more active and why can't I be like it? Like I have a client who's a nine who works in like an intense like corporate environment. And she is all with like all threes and eights. And she just came in a lot of like why can't I be as direct as these people? What's wrong with me? There's something wrong with me that I can't be like these people, that I can't be direct. And it's like, no, there's not anything wrong with you. Their directness is their way of coping, just like your not being direct is your way of coping. There's not, you're not, they're not any better than you are, which is, I think, to sort of get out of that shame place. Let's, because it lets my client decide their goal. It's like, no, your goal doesn't have to be just to be like other people, because that's a very nine goal. But like, what do you want? Like, how do you want to do this? That's a great example, I think, of that late in the corporate environment, just like for years. And from that has felt very inadequate. And bear, I'm not good enough. And why can't I just do this thing that seems so easy for other people?
I really appreciate that example. I mean, I think culturally also we value people who are assertive.
Totally.
Extroversion is valued, I think, especially like in the workplace, but everywhere really, I feel like, oh great, you're an extrovert, you're assertive, or like you're happy, you know, there are just certain traits that are
They kind of
considered
tend to be
more
valued
valuable.
more. And which is just sucks, because it's like that creates shame in people who aren't that way. It creates this like, why am I not like this? And we get stuck in this sort of like this meta narrative that like this is how I should be, when in reality that's just how some people are, and that's what we value currently as a culture.
I like the question that you asked. You know, that's how those people are. What do you want separate from
This is a
comparing
hard
yourself to
question
those
for
people?
nines.
It is.
Usually it's
It
like,
is a
I
hard
have no
question.
idea. Can you please tell me?
Right. That's what I would ask my therapist.
I need an adult to tell
Yeah.
me the answer to this question,
Right.
because I don't know.
Oh my gosh. It's my whole life. I'm like, I have no answers and I just need to phone a friend or ask someone, you know. Oh gosh. Okay. So I have a million questions. I need to
Yeah,
narrow
keep
them down.
going.
I have so many on my little paper here. Okay. Now, this is kind of, I had this thought a few minutes ago when you were talking about the process of growth for nines, but you're a nine too. And so I was just curious in the moment, like, what would you say, and this is more on the personal side, like, what would you say is a win that you've had, like a small 10% win that you've had recently?
Recently,
Well, recently is subjective, I guess.
sure. A small, like a win. Almost like something like looking at myself, like, wow, I did that different. Kind of like I've grown in this sort of thing. Oh, that's a really good question.
That you're comfortable sharing. This doesn't have to be your therapy session. I'm putting you on the
Let's.
spot. I'm too deep here.
Man, I think it's, I'll just be, let's get vulnerable. Let's do it. Just a few nights ago, I was having what I call like a shame attack. It's like a panic attack, but it's like this shame space where I get so frozen. It's this sort of frozen place where, so with my partner, like, I know that it's important to share what I'm feeling. I know it's important to share if something she said hurt or something, because I don't want to sit there and get resentful. And I know intellectually that she won't know unless I tell her. But all I can think about is the way that it's going to hurt her feelings. And if I share this, she'll be upset and it'll be bad and all these things. And then I got more and more frozen. And what happens with me is like, the more I don't share, the more triggered I get, because I feel more and more alone, the more this is happening inside of me and not sharing. And so it kind of gets worse and worse. And so I was like, I need to share, I need to share. And this can happen every once in a while. It's not always triggered by this, but like I get in the shame spiral, the shame attack, where, man, I'm just beating the shit out of myself. Like, if I was just better at this, I could do it. What's my problem? And have all these spinning thoughts. I go right to that sick space of how this is gonna get bad and we're gonna break up and like I gotta tell my family and like all this stuff. It's a lot of anxious attachment stuff that comes out of me too. But I was like very emotional, and I finally decided to share, and I felt so dumb. I was like, this is so stupid, just internally. This is embarrassing. I'm overly emotional. I'm too much. She's gonna get sick of this. But then I had this moment where I kind of popped out of that, where I was like, wait, that's actually not true. This happens every once in a while, and it never lasts forever. Like, I heard her talk, so she's a therapist too. And I heard her talking to me in a way that like I talk to my clients when they're very, very dysregulated. And I was like, wait, I'm just really dysregulated. I'm not, nothing is actually wrong with me. I'm not an idiot. I'm just very dysregulated. And I was like, what do I need? I think I need to breathe. And like, oh, I just started taking deep breaths, and I kind of like got embodied and kind of got in my body and grounded myself. And it was, I just, yeah. So that's kind of that moment where I just like, holy shit. Like I saw that sugar for what it was, and I didn't believe it in the moment, which is a big deal, which is a big deal. I don't know if that answers your
That
question. I
is
don't know if
a
that's
huge
kind of,
win. Yeah, my question was, what's a small win? But
yeah,
that's like a
okay. I guess that was
huge.
a big one. That was a big one.
Oh,
I
that was
feel
a big
really,
one.
really proud of that one. I feel really proud that I was able to do that. I'm able to kind of, I've done the work and the kind of meditating practice that I do to let me see that, and this journaling practice I do in the morning, and just being more and more kind and compassionate to myself, and not believing those messages a little more and more. And that was one of these times where it really clicked. It was like, wow, I just reacted very differently to the situation than I normally would have in the past. I did not stay stuck for nearly as long as I might have in the past.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, not that you never get stuck, but like the frequency, how long you're stuck. I think those are things
Yeah,
to pay attention
yes.
to, right? Like
100%.
those
It's
can
not
be
about not getting
wins.
stuck, because you never will not get stuck. If you have that expectation for yourself, you're gonna be very disappointed.
And thank you for sharing that. That was really
Yeah.
vulnerable. But I think it's like important for all of, for nines to hear each other talk about
Sure.
how it feels like in the moment. When you're
Ooh.
struggling,
Yeah.
like
Can I
even
share
in your
another one
body.
that's oh, sorry. Yes, in your body. That's a big piece. I had another one that's a little more mild that I'm recently proud of. So I was talking with some friends recently, and there's a friend that I have who is also nine and very, very nine-ish. And she's like being treated poorly at her job, and she wants to get a new job, and they're kind of not giving her a good deal. She's like, and she was in this place of like, well, can I ask for that? Is that okay? Like undervaluing herself a lot. And I saw it. I was like, this is so nine. I do this all the time. And she's so stuck in this place where she doesn't believe that she has value, and she doesn't believe that she can ask for it. And then so I saw that, and then I was like, she doesn't want to hear that from me. It's not going to be helpful if I say anything about it. So I was doing the same thing.
It's like
I
a
was
double
devaluing what I
nine.
have. It is.
Yes.
It is. And I was like, actually, you know what? I'm
Nine
going to say something.
squared.
Yes. And then it turned into, when I saw that, I was like, wait a second. I think I have something to offer her here. I've struggled with this a lot. I was like, hey, you probably won't believe this, but you deserve to ask for this. You deserve this. You get to be straightforward. And if they are upset with you about it, then like, forget them. You don't want to work for them anyways. And just able to like, I knew she wouldn't believe it directly and quickly, because it's such a deeply held belief, but just me giving myself permission to speak. And then she texted later and said, like, thank you to the people who are there. I said, thank you. That really helped. That really helped motivate me to ask for what I needed. I was like, oh, wow. So when I show up and share what I think can be helpful to people, like, it can make an impact. Cool.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whoa, that's I love that win too. I
Me
love that
too.
one. It's just so hilarious, like two nines in the conversation like that. And not, yeah, devaluing, it's just something you knew, something you felt. I mean, you're a therapist, so
Yeah,
you're
see it all the
good at
time.
recognizing something, supporting someone, So, but even
Yeah, sure.
then, even just with a friend, it's like, well, let me hold that back because maybe it's.
Yeah, like, this is literally my job to do this for people, and yet I sit there thinking like, nah, I probably don't have any value to offer this person. That's why, like, what we could convince ourselves out of is impressive.
I had, this is not really related, but I guess I'm just sharing it because it's another way of. It's just another manifestation of how we keep ourselves small. I had a friend, a newer friend, who said, you never share anything about yourself. Like, I don't, it was like he was saying, I'm uncomfortable with you because, like, you're an enigma
Whoa.
and
Okay,
everything's about
sure.
me. You like ask a lot of questions about me, but you
Okay.
don't share a lot about yourself. And no one
Yeah.
had ever said that to me before, but I
Wow.
was, and I have to, I guess I'm being careful about how I'm experiencing that kind of feedback because there was a part of me that was like, oh, am I being perceived as boring? Am I boring?
Okay.
Am I just
Very
really
triggering for a
vanilla?
nine. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Am I not as special? Am I not important? Yeah.
And meanwhile, I in the when I first meet people, I get very inquisitive and like that seven
Sure.
enthusiasm comes
Sure.
out when I meet people because
Okay.
all I want to
Yeah.
know is like, I want to know all the coolest things about you right now. And like even the dark and the four in my the four in my tri-type is like, well, I want to know all your deepest struggles too, because
Okay,
I think that's so
sure.
cool. Let's just go
Perfect.
there. Let's skip the
Perfect.
small talk.
Anything but
So
me. That's what I'm hearing you say.
that is exactly it. And I didn't realize that I do that until someone said, like, actually
Wow.
don't. But he's, I think maybe he might be an eight. But
Sure.
he was like, I don't like that about you. He didn't say it in those words.
Okay.
But
Wow.
I
Well,
thought
kind of
I
what he's
was
saying is
being
like, I
more.
want more of you. I value
Yes.
you enough, and I would like for you to bring more of yourself, please.
Yes. I never heard that before because I thought I was being
Wow.
likable by asking
Sure.
questions and like being enthusiastic about you. But it was like the opposite. So yeah,
Wow. It's
I just
that's a
share that,
big part
yeah.
of It's I remember thinking, but I did this training years ago. It was sort of like about couples therapy and kind of the cycle that each couple gets into and how it hurts them and gets stuck. And I remember thinking like, oh, I'm good. I don't get in these cycles. I never like, because one of them is like yelling or getting defensive. I was like, oh, I don't yell or get defensive. So like, I'm good. I'm like thinking that was actually true. But what I do to people, what nines do to people is a different kind of hurt in a relationship. It's not a, I'm going to be direct and mean and angry and hurt your feelings. It's I'm going to not be involved in this and like check out from this relationship, and people will experience me as me thinking they're not important. Like a nines don't like, I've ruined some friendships by not valuing myself. Because like I don't show up, I don't talk about things, and the message they get is he doesn't care about me, or he doesn't want me to be here. Does that make sense? Which is so weird, because in my triggerness, if I'm not important, the people around me feel not important when I kind of get reactive from those triggers. Does that make sense? So it's
I think I had an
hold
audio
on.
issue there
There
for
we
a
go.
second.
Okay.
Can you repeat the last line? I'm sorry. Do you
What did I
remember it?
say? What did I say? Probably wasn't important. I'm just kidding. Yeah, it's what was I talking about? It's this sort of, so I mean, this, I don't know if this is exactly what I said, but I've seen this meme before that really relates to nines, and this is, I don't burn bridges. I ignore them until they structurally degrade and fall apart. Like,
Oh,
ooh, like I may not
yeah.
be, I like saw myself as not like a bad, mean person who, but it's like I was hurting people in my own way by actually weirdly not valuing myself and not showing up. I've
Yes.
had people say like, it's, I have this thing written on my desk that a few weeks ago I wrote down, inspired by this conversation with my sister-in-law. I said, it says, you will only limit, like, when you limit yourself, the only thing you're doing is something like decreasing the amount of value you can put out into the world. Like, you're not doing anybody favors by limiting yourself and not showing up in the way that you think you are as a nine. Because your voice
Right.
needs to be heard. It's important. You are valuable. And I think people feel that in relationships when a nine is just like a, becomes like a nothing burger. Like this kind of
Nothing
void
burger.
of like where like
Yeah.
they so share so little of themselves, nobody gets to know you, and people don't get to care about you. People don't get a benefit from the awesome things about you.
Yeah. I think, I wonder, I've heard some nines say that they have trouble identifying who they are, what they like, you know, finding their edges and, you know.
Yes.
So there's that. And then I think there's maybe another type of nine, and I'll fall into this category where, like, I actually do feel like I'm very specific about how I am and what I like and what my
Okay.
quirks are and my interests and stuff. But it's more of like, I just don't want to share it because
Sure. Okay.
it's going back to like,
Doesn't feel
it's not
important.
really about me. I would rather make it about
Yeah.
you.
Yeah, which is a
Because
very
we, I
comfortable
think
place
maybe
for nines
you'll,
to be.
it's comfortable. And there's also something about like, I think you will like me better if I focus on you and don't say
Sure.
anything about
Yep.
myself.
If I just like reflect the best parts of you back to you, you'll like me. Which
Yeah.
is, I think, why
Yeah.
people get along with nines so well in a lot of ways. People tend to across the board say they like nines in a lot of ways, but like that's because that's because the nine can make themselves a very easy, problem-free part of a relationship. It's like, I like you because you make me feel great, and you never push back, and you never challenge me. So this feels easy. But like, which is, this isn't necessarily a good thing long term.
Yeah. Oh no. Well, now I'm questioning my whole friend list. Like,
Oh, really?
who? Now I'm like, wait a minute, who only likes me because when I'm really leaning into the nine defense mechanisms, is,
I think you'll find that out. I don't know. I don't want you to get into like shaming yourself and thinking everybody hates you, but you will find that out if and when you start setting boundaries and showing up. The people who can't handle it, people who call you selfish, are usually the people who have benefited from you being really nothing with them.
So interesting. I do feel really firm in my relationships where I am myself, where I do kind of show all my colors, and that makes sense. Like, that's
Sure.
how a
Yes.
relationship works. Like, we love each other because we see each other, and
Yes,
it
that's how you,
works.
yes, you cannot be loved if you're not seen.
Okay, so I guess as we kind of wrap things up, one question I had for you is, I hear this question a lot. It's just kind of like almost like a generic, right, interview question, but I'm asking you for a reason. So I'll
Okay,
say my question
fire
and then I'll
it.
share why I'm
Let's
asking it,
Okay.
because I need permission to ask questions on my own
On your own podcast.
show.
There it is. There it is. It's sneaky.
There we go. Okay, so my question is, what advice would you give to your younger nine self? And not necessarily like child Michael, but like not quite the Michael you are now as a nine.
Yeah. Ugh. Wow, what
So
a question.
and I am asking that because I'm wondering if that might just be something we all can ask ourselves
Sure.
as nines, but I don't know. It's just something I would love to hear. I think people would love to hear it too.
Wow. Let's see. Thinking even of like college age Michael right around that time when I just had no idea who I was and experiencing so many new things. And yeah, when I look back at that time period, I see myself as so small and so weird and so not important. And yet I was student body president the last 2 years of college and freshman classman, and so I've been so involved in all this stuff. And but I don't know, like, because but to experience, like, I experienced it very different. And so I think like what I would tell that version of myself is like, you are way more important and special and capable than you think. And you thinking you aren't important is actually a disservice to other people and yourself. It's not a favor to them. I don't know. Like, I likely wouldn't be able to hear that, but if I could somehow let myself hear that, I think it would be so, that would change so many of the decisions that I made. Or like, yeah, to meet your needs and do what you want isn't selfish. Or you thinking you're awesome doesn't mean other people aren't awesome. It's not a zero sum game. It's not a slice of pie that if you take it, other people have less. That's not how it works.
Awesome. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
I know, I set it up so that I would end here, but now I have like a follow-up question from something we talked about 20 minutes
Okay.
ago.
Yeah, do it. I got
This
time.
will be my real ending.
Okay.
So, I think this conversation, the way that it unfolded, is really like just a discussion about like what the growth feels like and what it looks like so that we're not shaming ourselves and not becoming a perfect person just because we have access to this tool, the Enneagram. I think a big part of that conversation is recognizing how it feels in our bodies in the moment when things are hard or when we're doing something different or when we're feeling triggered or in that spiral, like you said. So can you, what do you know about like how we can recognize that in our bodies so that it's not like, all right, time to hide in our heads in the sand, but like, oh, okay, this is how it feels. And so therefore, XYZ. Like,
Yes,
how do you teach this with your clients or use this on yourself, kind of
yes,
thing?
that is like, I'm so happy you asked that because that is like the thing to do to get out of those places is to connect to your body. That's like arguably the most important thing you can do. So I love they ask that question. I work with every one of my clients with that. Kind of how I tend to say it is that one thing that's helpful with that is like if you are starting to get angry or sad or upset or something on a scale of 0 to 10, once it gets to like a 7 or an 8, it's this point of no return, right? You just can't, you just are get so reactive and so big or whatever, right? And you can't sort of step back from it. If all of a sudden the first time you notice it, it's at a 7 or an 8. But if you start to notice those things coming up when they're a lot lower, 2, 3, or 4, then you have so much more ability to step away from it and step back from it in that moment than when you do when it's so to just being more aware of how you feel and when it starts to get bad, because nines are so unaware of that. We're one of like our go-to is numbing out from our own body sensations. We're in the body center, but we're numbed out from it. And so to pay attention to those gives us so much information about what's going on inside of us that we usually ignore, and just to our own. So it's just so beneficial for us to know and be able to kind of see ourselves in that way and know what's going on. So that's a piece of it. And another piece of why it's so important is our bodies are the only thing that is actually real in this moment right now. Your thoughts and your emotions are all about the future or the past, or they're all over the place and they switch and they move and they change. But the only thing that's actually steady and real and grounding is our physical body, is our breath. It happens over and over again as long as we're living, versus emotions and thoughts are all over the place. And so when I do meditating with people, it's all the going to the body first is the most important thing. I recorded this series just recently. I can't wait to show you this. We talked about this the other day, with this meditation series where we meditate for each number and kind of connect to this essential quality for each number. But every meditation starts with the body. I start with 8, 9, and 1, and then build on the heart, and then build on the mind, because the body is so important. It's when I am panicking the most or the most sort of triggered, getting into my body, noticing my breath, getting up and walking or moving or tensing my body, like it changes everything. But I can get so stuck. I can be like, man, I'm so stuck in this emotional place. What's going on? And then my partner can be like, you can go for a walk. That helps. I'm like, no, probably not right now. And I could just so when I'm so dysregulated, but it works. It's so important. It keeps us grounded to the present moment. And what happens is, so because when we're spinning, when we're triggered, we think all these things, and this is going to be like this, and what happens if this, and those things make us more anxious and cause more flooding of emotions in our body and hormones in our body. And so when we focus on our body, it allows our thoughts and our emotions to slow down enough to kind of come back to baseline. That, like I've done this before when I'm having like shame attack. I'm just focusing my body, and then I like check back in on my thoughts. Like, nope, still beating myself up. Let's go back to the body. And the next time I check, it's back to normal more. Like it's because when we give the thoughts fuel and think about them and just what's the word? Ruminate on them. It actually creates more and more difficult emotions, which creates more and more difficult thoughts. And so to briefly, for as long as you can, step out of the thoughts and emotions and stay in your body, it lets those all kind of calm down to get back to baseline. So you can, because you're not your best self, you're not your full self. Your brain is shutting off in weird ways when you're in a triggered place like that. So to come back to your body and let the thoughts and emotions come back to a baseline just kind of resets everything. And so that's another piece that's just really, really important of staying in your body and being in your body.
Yeah, awesome.
Hope that makes sense.
Okay, cool. Okay, I'm not that mad at myself for how I ended this, because we ended like on a nice emotionally supportive note, and then we brought it to some practical tips here, like without me having to say what are some tips you would give to
Hey,
nine.
perfect.
Yeah, so cool. Michael,
Can
this
I share
was
something briefly?
awesome.
Actually, can I
Yeah.
share something just about like kind of things I'm doing like on my Instagram as
Yes.
like a way to just let people
That's
know if they're listening? I'd love that.
absolute. That was my
Okay,
last question
cool.
for wrapping up. Like,
Oh,
what are you
perfect.
excited about? What are you doing right now?
Yeah. Okay. So the thing I'm most excited about is this these meditation series thing. I don't know exactly what I'm going to call it yet, but it's this way to kind of embody each number. And I teach meditation through it. And it's like this very non-heady, non-linear way to understand each type, and in a way also understanding yourself. And I'm so excited about it. Each video is about 15 minutes. There's 9 videos. I'm going to sell them as a package. And it really changed me in a lot of very real ways, even prepping this and learning about this. It's inspired by a teacher named Russ Hudson. Love it. And then also what's coming up in just a few weeks,
Can I
actually,
ask
is
a
my
question?
ooh,
Can I ask a
yes,
question about
yeah.
that? Would it be, of course, it would be beneficial for a nine to hear the meditation on the nine. Is it beneficial to listen to all of them?
Yes, I kind of want to. I mean,
Is that part
people
of?
will likely just buy it and do their own, but each meditation builds on itself on the previous one. It starts at 8, goes all the way around to 7. And I
Yeah.
want people to be able to experience that as a whole, not just
Yeah. 'Cause
individually.
And I think that would be helpful for nines too to access the different parts of themselves
Yeah,
through
all
the
of us,
diminishing, like,
100%.
right?
Yep,
Yeah.
yep. And
Cool.
so that's what I'm excited about. And then here in a few weeks is my Enneagram for Therapist course that's coming up. I teach this. I used to teach it a couple times a year. Now I'm only doing it once a year. It's a 6 week course for therapists who want to use the Enneagram in their practice. Love doing that. Love that. And then in October, I have a Enneagram and meditation retreat in Bali, which is so cool and sounds
That is,
fake coming out of my mouth. It's
yeah, that is so cool. I saw that and I was like, wow, I
yeah,
want
it's
to
like a
go. It's awesome.
yes, I'm excited. It's like a 5 day thing. It's equal parts growth, meditation, connecting to yourself, recentering, changing your life in a lot of ways, and equal parts like badass vacation and some really cool
Nice.
places that are very, it's so it's not just done by me. It's not just like a meditation self-help retreat. It's done through a company called Trova Trip, who does these awesome trips. We have places all across the world with amazing. So we're going to do things in temples and learning about local culture, and it's so cool. I'm very, very, very excited about
Oh,
that.
wow. Oh my gosh. I hope I can do that one. I hope we can join you on one in the
Yeah,
future.
I would love
That
that.
sounds awesome. And then of course you'll be at Nines Rising with me,
Yeah,
coming
yes.
up on May 4th. So that's really exciting too. That's awesome. And I love your Enneagram for Therapists course too. I've seen you mention that. There are a lot of therapists who listen to this podcast. So
Cool. Hey,
yeah.
perfect.
So that's perfect. Perfect. All right, Michael, thank you so much. This was
Yeah.
awesome. You are
Thank you. I'm so
awesome.
glad you had me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank
Appreciate
you.
it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Hey, Type 9. Did you enjoy that episode? If you found it helpful, would you be the best and subscribe to the podcast and leave a rating and review? This really helps with getting the podcast seen by other peacemakers out there. Lastly, if you're looking for Type 9 resources, events, and services, check out Enneagram9.com. It's also where you can find a link to my services as an intuitive counselor and astrologer who works specifically with Type 9s. Again, that's Enneagram9.com. See you there.